Foy Short, A Life in Southern Africa, Chapter 3, Stateside, 1940 to 1947. Foy's trip to the United States in 1940 marked a turning point in his life for several reasons. Obviously, it was his first time to launch out on his own from the sheltered life in the Rhodesian backcountry into a world that would be dominated 5 more years by the Second World War. Spiritually, the ocean voyage would challenge his faith in ways that he could have never imagined before. Thomas Hartle reported on Foy's visit to Cape Town, South Africa, on his way to the States. Quote, "We are glad to report that we have had with us from the 1st of November Brother Foy Short of Salisbury, Southern Rhodesia, passing on his way through to the USA to college to study for a period of 2 years. He sailed on the 9th of December. Also passing through on their way to the USA were Brother and Sister S.D. Garrett and family and Sister Sybil Short. They arrived here in Cape Town on December 6, 1940. The association with these brethren and visitors was not soon to be forgotten. Brother Foy Short gave an address on the outline of the mission work. We indeed admired him as a young man for the purpose and desire he was setting out to do." Close quote. When Foy boarded the SS President Polk on November 9, 1940, for a 3-week voyage to New York, he realized that 32 Mormon missionaries who had just finished their 2-year tour of duty in South Africa would be accompanying him. He said, "Within a couple of hours, I found myself cornered. For the next 3 weeks until we got to New York, they had a daily session with me. They were determined to convert me to Mormonism." Poor Foy had never had any experiences talking with those of other religious persuasions. He had certainly never encountered any Mormons at Macheke or at Wuyu Wuyu. His father had never taught him much about the doctrines of various denominations and sects, and he felt powerless before the Latter-day Saint onslaught. As soon as he arrived in New York, he wrote his father, "I'll have to find some answers, or else I'll have to become a Mormon." Though the ocean voyage involved lifeboat drills and concerns about German U-boats, Foy's primary memory was his helplessness in the face of his Mormon interrogators. He determined never to be so defenseless again and to make an intensive study of Christ's system of faith as contrasted with human systems. He would emphasize that difference in his teaching for the rest of his life. Foy's sister Sybil was able to depart Cape Town on the ship The City of New York, less than a month after Foy's departure, traveling with the S.D. Garrett family. She recalled that when they left Salisbury, the temperature was 105 degrees. When they landed in Boston on January 8, 1941, the temperature was 10 degrees below zero. She also remembered vividly the lifeboat drills and blackouts. Though the United States was technically neutral in December of 1940, its ships, such as the City of New York, were still in danger on the high seas. Foy and Sybil's sister, Beth, was able to come on the same ship 6 months later. On its following run from Cape Town to New York, it was sunk on March 29, 1942, by the famed U-boat captain George Lassen. Sybil recalled, "Our neighbors at Wuyu Wuyu were Methodist missionaries, and they had a son on that trip. He was rescued from a lifeboat." When Foy arrived in New York City, he was met by Homer Reeves, who took him to the subway for transportation around town. Foy quickly learned that New York was no Rhodesia. When he arrived at the gate to the trains, he followed his English upbringing by letting all the ladies go first. Reeves walked on before realizing that Foy wasn't with him. He went back to the gate where Foy was letting the ladies through and told him that in New York, you don't do that. Foy traveled across the states, visiting congregations, family members in Oklahoma, and checking into the possibility of attending several colleges. He visited Harding College in Searcy, Arkansas, since it was a successor to his parents' school, Cordell Christian College. However, he received better financial grants from Abilene Christian College and began to make plans to attend there along with his sister Sybil. He recalled that at the end of his visit to Harding, several older students took him aside and advised him not to go to Abilene because of its anti-premillennial stance. However, neither Foy nor his father believed in premillennialism, though his father did not think that differences over this theory should affect fellowship. Foy later turned down a scholarship offer from the Don Carlos Janes Foundation because Janes' name was linked so prominently to that theory. Will and Delia Short's mentor at Cordell Christian College, J.N. Armstrong, was also the founder of Harding College. Armstrong was deeply disappointed that Harding did not match Abilene's offer of financial aid for Foy and Sybil. Delia Short had written Mrs. Armstrong that she couldn't imagine their going to any other school than Harding, as long as you and Brother Armstrong and families are at Harding. Armstrong lamented, "We have the distinction of having more missionaries in the foreign field than any other school, and we are now losing their children to other colleges." However, it was to Abilene that Foy, Sybil, and Beth would go, and it was there that they would make the special friendships that would stay with them for the rest of their lives. Abilene Christian College. A. B. Barrett established what became Abilene Christian College as a preparatory school in 1906. After becoming a fully accredited college in 1919, its enrollment increased to around 600 students by 1925. New land was purchased for a campus northeast of Abilene, and the college was able to survive there, though threatened with bankruptcy during the Great Depression. When Foy Short arrived in 1941, Don Morris was president, and the school was about to enter the World War II era. Foy and Sybil went to Walter Adams, the dean of students, for placement in classes. After checking the transcripts from their Rhodesian schools, he offered to start both as juniors, though Sybil decided that she would start as a second semester sophomore. However, she later took summer classes so that she could graduate early and get back to a boyfriend in Rhodesia. Therefore, she and Foy graduated together in 1943. Abilene had a group of highly respected Bible professors in the early 1940s, including R.C. Bell, Homer Haley, Charles Roberson, and Paul Southern. However, no one influenced Foy during his days at Abilene more than a fellow student, Benjamin Lee, or Benny Lee Fudge, did. Foy said, "Benny Lee was the closest thing to a brother that I ever had." Foy's own brother, Bill, was born after he left Rhodesia, and therefore he never had as much adult-to-adult personal contact with him as he did with Fudge. Fudge, from Limestone County in North Alabama, was older than most of his fellow students in Abilene. He had been raised in extreme poverty and forced to become the primary breadwinner for his family at 14 years of age when his father became disabled. He and his younger brothers alternated between going to school and sharecropping to support the family. Fudge was known for carrying his Bible into the fields to read whenever the mules were resting. Finally, he was able to graduate from high school when he was 21 years old. After he worked a few years to earn some more money, he attended David Lipscomb College in Nashville, which was then a junior college. After finishing his studies at Lipscomb and graduating as class valedictorian, Fudge transferred to Abilene, where he would meet Foy and Sybil. Soon after meeting Sybil, Benny Lee Fudge asked her for a date. After it, he told a friend, "If Miss Short were not determined to go to Africa, I'd marry her." After the same date, she told one of her companions, "I wouldn't marry him if he were the last man on earth." They married the day after they graduated from Abilene, and thus Foy's best friend became his brother-in-law. Fudge moved back to North Alabama with Sybil, where he preached, started Athens Bible School, and ran the CEI bookstore in Athens until his tragic death from pneumonia in 1972. Though small of stature, he was always a whirlwind of productive spiritual activity. He once wrote Foy, "I certainly wish there were 40 of me." Sewell Hall credits him for being one of God's primary tools for the explosive growth among Churches of Christ in Limestone County from the 1940s through the mid-1960s. Ellen Bays, Fudge's niece by marriage, recalls that her uncle's dream at Abilene was to go back to Alabama and see a church on every corner in Limestone County. She then laughed and said, "He succeeded." Benjamin Lee Fudge was greatly influenced by what historians Bobby Valentine and John Mark Hicks have called the Nashville Bible School tradition that came primarily from the influence of David Lipscomb and James Harding. Their approach to the Scriptures emphasized God's grace, separation from the world, trust in God's providence, and strict construction in the interpretation of the Scriptures. Some who today claim the Lipscomb-Harding heritage is their own do not emphasize that latter characteristic. Historian Richard Hughes believes that Barton W. Stone's teachings had a strong influence on Lipscomb and Harding. Lipscomb and Harding's grace plus convictions approach heavily influenced churches in North Alabama in the early part of the 20th century. When Chris Cotton read Valentine and Hicks' description of the Nashville Bible School tradition, he realized that he knew it well from visiting preachers he heard in his childhood in Nashville in the 1980s and 1990s, but that the preachers who reflected it were primarily from Alabama. He thought it was the Alabama tradition. Benny Lee Fudge would pass on these values to his protege, Foy Short, although Foy had probably already received a good dose from his parents, who in turn had received them from J.M. Armstrong, a student of Lipscomb's. Foy doesn't remember the first time he saw Benny Lee Fudge, though he thinks it would have been in the Mission Study Club. They soon became fast friends. Benny Lee called Foy, Harold Foy, or H.F., Horseface, and Foy called his friend Benjamin Lee, or B.L., Bird Legs. They occasionally used these and other similar monikers in their personal correspondence through the years. Abilene's grants for the children of missionaries did not cover all expenses, so Foy worked 5 hours a day in the cafeteria as a server and cleaner to complete his payment. Foy's wife Margaret said, "He washed the floor so well, they made him manager of the bookstore." A glance through the 1943 Abilene yearbook, The Prickly Pear, shows that Foy was popular and respected at the school. He was president of the student council, leader of the evangelistic forum, and a member of several other student organizations, including the Mission Study Club that was led by his buddy Benny Lee Fudge. Foy led the group his junior year. He recalled that his fellow students constantly teased him about his accent, which probably added to his popularity. "They called me a Limey," he said. "Then when I got back to Africa, they called me a Yank." The Abilene Reporter News mentions Foy in a number of articles about social activities at the college, For example, picnickers at a sub-T16 social club event gathered around the campfire to hear stories by Foy Short. Besides Fudge, Foy met several other students at Abilene who would be his friends in the future. He influenced one, Eldred Eccles, to go to Africa. Eccles spent the rest of his life there and wrote two books about his experiences. Others, like Doyle Banta and Charles Chumbly, worked with him at North Alabama Bible School a few years later. Foy recalled that Banta preached every Sunday about 40 miles north of Big Springs, Texas. Sometimes Foy would accompany him. Foy was Banta's best man at his wedding. Foy remembered that his friend Ralph Graham was not only extremely conservative, but also very militant. He had a car with a loudspeaker and on occasions parked it in front of the Methodist or Baptist church with several other preacher boys. They would then turn the amplifier up to preach to the Methodist or Baptist inside. The beleaguered churchgoers called the police on several occasions to get relief from the overzealous college boys. Foy called his classmate Mac Kercheval a very fine man. Kercheval was a pioneer in preaching among Spanish-speaking people. Foy had an especially interesting anecdote about his fellow student Ira North, who would later be known not so much for his emphasis on doctrinal purity, but rather as Fiery Ira, the promoter. "I remember the day we graduated and were saying goodbye to each other. He met me on the steps of the auditorium. Because some of the hard preachers thought I was a bit soft, he said, 'Foy, you just remember to stick to what the book says. Don't you leave what the book says.'" Teachers. Foy said that R.C. Bell had a tremendous influence on me. He was a very spiritually minded man. He added, "Back in those days, there was a thing about hard preaching or soft preaching. Unless you called names when preaching about denominationalism, you were a soft preacher." R.C. Bell was considered a soft preacher because he emphasized the spiritual side more than the doctrinal side of Christian living. R.C. Bell was a regular contributor to Foy's support in Rhodesia until his own salary was cut in August of 1950 and he was unable to continue. Homer Haley was another favorite teacher. Foy said that he emphasized both the practical and doctrinal aspects of the scriptures in his teaching. He was so clear and made things so understandable. Foy took two classes that dealt specifically with common religious errors. Haley taught one and Paul Southern the other. Foy wanted to make sure that he never found himself defenseless again as he was on the long ocean voyage with the Mormons. Foy remembered J.G. Thomas as being quite active and quite a leader in the class. He remembered one thing in particular about Charles Roberson. In the first class, he said, "The three R's of learning are repetition, repetition, repetition." From then on, every day he would come into class and ask, "What are the three R's of learning?" Howard Shug encouraged Foy and others who were interested in foreign evangelism. He and Don Morris supervised a collection of student essays on the topic that was published in 1941 under the title, The Harvest Field. Foy wrote a chapter on Korea and, of course, Africa, and co-wrote one on Cuba. His teacher, Howard Shug, and J.W. Treat focused their emphasis on evangelistic efforts in Latin America. Abilene had a blind music teacher, Leonard Burford, who made a big impression on Foy when he taught him song leading. Foy said he had a pattern for each time, 4-4, 6-8, etc. I don't know how he knew, but if you didn't have the pattern right, he knew. Foy graduated in 1943, ranking second academically among transfer students to Abilene Christian College. His buddy, Benny Lee Fudge, ranked first. North Alabama. When Foy graduated from Abilene, he thought about going directly back to Africa, but Benny Lee Fudge talked him into going to North Alabama. Foy said he knew all the churches there and could introduce them to me. If I could work among them for a while and get them acquainted with me, I would have a better chance of getting their support for the work in Africa. I had in mind to stay there about 5 or 6 years before going back. Foy had already been to Athens, Alabama, the summer between his junior and senior year at Abilene to work for the summer with Jack Rollins at the Market Street Congregation. After his first sermon there, Brother Bullington, one of the elders, Foy thinks it was J.C. Bullington, invited him home for lunch. While relaxing on the front porch with Foy, he asked him, "Foy, do you mind if I give you some advice?" Foy responded, "No." The elder said, "For a sermon to be immortal, it doesn't have to be eternal." Foy's responsibilities at Market Street during the summer of 1942 were to preach, teach the young people's Bible class, and do door-to-door evangelistic work. The Limestone Democrat reported on July the 1st, 1943, "Brother Foy Short of Southern Rhodesia, Africa, will begin an open-air meeting Sunday night at the Squire Brooks place on the New Cut Road. This meeting and the Carey meeting are the first of a number of such meetings we expect to conduct in new places over the county this year. Irvin Lee, A.J. Rollins, M.A. Creel, and Foy Short are working each morning this week with the Grant Street Church in Decatur in a daily Bible study for children." The Alabama Courier and Limestone Democrat have a number of such notices in the church news section about various meetings and projects conducted by Foy and other preachers in Athens and Decatur during the mid-1940s. The first congregation Foy worked with after graduation was the Memorial Drive Congregation in Decatur, Alabama. The congregation had about 40 members, with the Cagles and McCorkles being some of the stronger families in the congregation. Foy's work involved visiting wayward Christians and door knocking to find new contacts for the gospel. Athens Bible School. Foy helped his friend Benjamin Lee Fudge with his dream of starting a school with Christian teachers in Athens. The North Alabama Bible School, which eventually became Athens Bible School, first met on September the 6th, 1943, offering classes for students in grades 7 through 12. Foy was on the first faculty along with Benny Lee Fudge, Charles Chumley, A.J. Jack Rawlings, Irvin Lee, George Williams, Wayne Mickey, and George Hook. Foy taught algebra, geography, and the Bible, and was the official bookkeeper since he was a business major at Abilene. He and the other faculty members worked without pay from the school, supporting themselves in various other ways. Foy had special memories of several of his fellow teachers. He said of Irvin Lee, "He was a wonderful man. Though very soft-spoken, his lessons were as firm and solid as they could be." That description of Lee could also describe Foy, who shared his temperament and style in numerous ways. Foy mentioned Lee, along with A.J. Rawlings, as Alabama preachers, besides Fudge, who had an especially good influence on him. Foy called A.J. Rawlings one of the most passionate men I've known. Then, with characteristic understatement, he added, "He had a memory for poetry." Hundreds of Athens Bible School alumni who studied American and English literature under Rawlings from the 1940s into the 1980s could attest to that fact. After Foy returned to Rhodesia, his closest friend, Benny Lee Fudge, kept him up to date on news from Athens. For example, Fudge told him in 1948 about the elders of the New Sunset Congregation, later Eastside. Carl Richter, Earl Chandler, E.A. Cox, and Brother Jarrett, the school janitor. He opined that they were the best eldership in Limestone County, with a possible exception of the Market Street elders. Meeting Margaret Hall. Voice time in Alabama not only established long-term contacts with brethren who could help him for the rest of his life in Africa, but there he found his lifelong companion, Margaret. He had been somewhat interested in a young lady in Abilene, but she had no interest in moving to Africa, so, according to Foy's daughter Ellen Bays, that was that. However, Margaret would be another story. Margaret's family came from eastern Madison County, Alabama. The spiritual strength of the family came from her mother's side of the family. Margaret's maternal grandfather, Joseph David Jones, was known as Walking Bible Jones in North Alabama and Tennessee. It was said that he memorized the whole Bible. His father, Daniel Jones, was a Baptist preacher, but allowed Joe to visit other churches. One day, Joe came in and said that he wanted to be baptized in the Church of Christ. His father said, "If you do that, pack your bags and move out." However, Joe's mother, Parmelia, came to her son's defense and told her husband, "You've said all your life that one church is as good as another. He might as well go to the Church of Christ as anywhere else." Later, Daniel and Parmelia became Christians according to biblical teaching, and Daniel preached among Churches of Christ in North Alabama and Southern Tennessee. Both Daniel and his son Joseph worked with Charles Holder. A grainy picture of the two can be found in Holder's biography. Margaret's mother, Sarah Morris, she was called Morris more than Sarah, was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Shortly afterwards, her family moved to Limestone County, Alabama, where she lived until her mother died when she was 9. Then she shuttled between different sets of relatives in Madison and Limestone counties until she became an adult. She met Shelby Jordan Hall, who wasn't a Christian. Ellen Bay said of Hall, "He said he wanted to become a Christian, but not before they married, because people would say he became a Christian just to marry her." However, after he married Morris, he never obeyed the gospel. Therefore, Margaret's spiritual influence in her childhood came almost completely from her mother. Morris spent her adult life in Gurley, Alabama, and became such a leader in her home congregation on Hurricane Creek that the congregation became known as the Morris Church. Her granddaughter, Ellen Bay, said, "The men didn't know anything about singing. They would announce the song, and she would start it from the pew. She kept everything going. When she died, it folded." Margaret pointed out that in spite of her mother's leadership abilities, she was very careful not to violate the biblical principle of subjection. She said, "My mother was indeed the driving force in the little congregation, but only because it was forced on her. You wouldn't find anyone more anxious not to usurp authority than she." Margaret inherited her mother's decisive, achievement-oriented temperament. She graduated early from high school at 15 years of age and wanted to attend Freed Hardeman College, but her parents thought she was too young to travel so far away from home. So she went to business college in Huntsville. However, she couldn't get a job because she was too young. Finally, she turned 16 and got a job with Central Service Association, which did billing for various cooperatives and municipalities throughout the Tennessee Valley. She traveled in southern Tennessee and northern Alabama in her work. Margaret first met Foy when she visited relatives in Athens, attended the Market Street congregation, and heard him preach. He has no memory of seeing her on that occasion. However, they had other brief encounters at social engagements that Foy didn't remember. However, in August of 1944, her landlady, a Mrs. Taylor, who was a Christian, said, "I think you would enjoy meeting this young preacher down the street." She and Foy therefore met formally, and 4 months later, in December of 1944, they married. Margaret said, "He proposed not by saying, 'Will you marry me?' but rather, 'Will you go to Africa with me?'" Margaret's mother, Morris, was thrilled at her daughter's choice of a husband. When asked if he ever had problems with his mother-in-law, Foy said, "No, she treated me better than her own daughters." Ellen Bays said of her maternal grandmother, "She always wanted a son who was a preacher, but was thrilled that she was going to have a son-in-law who not only was a preacher, but a missionary." Margaret's decisive temperament was in many ways the opposite of Foy's easygoing nature, and yet opposites like them often attract and make good couples. Each sees in the other qualities that they themselves need. Margaret's forthrightness balanced Foy's relaxed style. Foy appreciated his wife's determination. Only a strong and resolute woman like her could survive the culture shock of leaving the United States to live in Africa for decades and eventually flourish there. Once, when Ellen went to her father to complain about her mother's directness, Foy told her, "You need to be more like your mother." He wrote in 1996, "Margaret is busy packing our suitcases for the Zimbabwe trip and dragging me, protesting all the way into the fuss and flurry. I'm so glad I married her. She sees that I'm ready to catch planes, etc." Foy and Margaret's youngest daughter, Kay, mentioned taking her father to a doctor's appointment in Nashville in September 2010. They were early for the appointment, so she decided to take him to Centennial Lake, where they watched the ducks and geese swim around the lake. As they watched, she began to tell her father how much she admired his remarkable life and accomplishments, and how many people he had touched by his absolute dedication to his Lord and Savior. He immediately said, "I couldn't have done it without your mother." Final years in Alabama. After Foy married Margaret, he continued to work with the church on Memorial Drive in Decatur, but also began to make plans to return to Africa. Finally, Foy resigned from the congregation and from Athens Bible School in the middle of 1946 so that he and Margaret could depart in July of 1946. However, after resigning, there were delays, first with passports and then a shipping strike, and it became obvious that they weren't going to be able to leave for Africa as soon as they hoped. Then, the Grant Street Church supported Foy to work in the eastern and southern parts of Decatur, where there were many mill workers and wayward disciples. They were able to start a congregation in South Decatur that later became the Somerville Road Church of Christ. He started another in East Decatur that was called Eastside. He also preached in various parts of Morgan County, where there were no full-time preachers. He reported to the church in Ferris, Texas, about a tent meeting in Danville, Alabama. Quote, "Last year, the audience had numbered about 50, and much opposition had been shown. To our surprise, the audience the first night numbered more than 100. One night, our 150 chairs were insufficient to seat the audience. It was originally planned to run the meeting for 10 days. But at the request of the people from the community, we went for a total of 18 days. There were 6 who obeyed the Lord in baptism." Close quote. Foy's parents visited North Alabama in May of 1947. The Alabama Courier printed a picture of them and their little son, Billy, with the following caption. "Mr. and Mrs. Short are the parents of Foy Short, minister of the Beach Street Church of Christ in Decatur, and Mrs. Benny Lee Fudge of Rogersville. Two other daughters, Mrs. Henry P. Ewing and Miss Margaret Ann Short, are in Abilene, Texas. This is the Shorts' first trip home since 1930. They originally went to Africa from Kansas in 1921. They are now visiting their children in this section for a few weeks. Foy and Margaret's oldest son, Harold, was born while they lived in Decatur. Ellen said that Harold was like a perfect child to her parents. While she and her younger brother, Jim, were always rowdy, Harold seemed to always be mature beyond his years. He started preaching in Rhodesia when he was 16, but soon would face spiritual challenges that would test his young faith. However, such family crises were still far in the future in 1947, when Foy and Margaret finally were able to get their passports and travel arrangements in order. The African frontier was calling them, and it was time to go. End of chapter 2.